Hi, everybody. It's Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that dares you to get out of the box of convention. And boy, are you doing that. I'm really thrilled to see our numbers growing and thank all of you for tuning in every week and spreading the word about the show and, more than that, spreading the word about the power of the human mind and what we can do as a collective to get things rolling. And that is what we're going to be talking about today, hopefully, with a guest who's asked me to come back on. He's got more information for us. He was with me last June. His name is Stephen Bassett, the director of Exopolitics. I'm sure a lot of you already know who I'm talking about. Stephen is a leading advocate for ending the 62-year government-imposed truth embargo regarding ET presence and the human race. He's an activist, political activist. He's a commentator, a columnist. He is the executive director of Paradigm Research Group and the Political Action Committee PPAC, creator of the Paradigm Clock, and executive producer of the X Conference. And we really, I mean, the man is doing his work out there. It's been extensive. He's been sending out so much information. And we're going to be talking about where we are now, because I think we're all kind of feeling that disclosure is imminent. But something seems to have blocked once again. Stephen said that Obama is probably going to be the disclosure president. Let's find out how he feels about that today. Hi, Steve. Thank you for coming back on.
Hi, Patricia. It's nice to be with you again.
Well, the last visit was fascinating, so go ahead and blow the roof off. What's the news?
Well, there's a great deal happening.
That's for sure.
2009 was a very interesting year, and much happened related to the disclosure process. Quickly, for your listeners, disclosure is the goal of the disclosure movement, and it is the formal acknowledgement of the extraterrestrial presence by governments of the world. Formal acknowledgement. Doesn't matter whether you think it's true or know it's true. It matters, but what is important for this movement?
Disclosure. I mean, all out of the bag.
Yeah, it's all out, all in the open. All of this comes under the larger context of what we call exopolitics, the political engagement of the UFO-ET issue on all levels. So that has been underway in earnest for some time now. The political engagement really gets going after the Cold War finally ends at the end of 1991. So in 2009, a great deal happened, but probably the most important event of 2009 was what didn't happen, and that is disclosure didn't take place. There was much speculation that it would. My position, of course, was that it could very well happen in 2009, and it should. And of course, we did a lot to help try to make that happen, but it didn't happen. There are probably a lot of reasons for that, but the most significant one, I'm sure, is the financial fiasco triggered by the blowing out into the mainstream of the financial mess the United States was in with the collapse of Lehman Brothers in October of 2008. This triggered a crisis that resulted in the Treasury being essentially emptied and hundreds of billions of dollars shoved into the mouths of Wall Street dudes that had pretty much caused the problem in the first place. And a lot of that money was then passed on to their shareholders and foreign banks they owed money to and everything else. So we basically made some unbelievably greedy people even more wealthy, bankrupted the country.
And continue to do so.
And what now?
And continue to do so.
And continue, yeah, right. This process is still underway. But the process was initiated in 2008, and by the time the Democrats were in the White House, it was well underway. So that they were unable to reverse policy, assuming they wanted to. So the effect of this awful year, and the people dealing with losses of homes and pensions and jobs, health care benefits, you name it, the people have been losing it. The ability of the Democrats to follow the game plan I think they had intended to follow was just knocked off its stride. And
okay,
as a result,
let me just interject a question
year.
Here.
Yeah.
What you keep you sound like you pretty confident that the Democrats want to do the disclosure.
Yeah.
And I'd like to know, what do you base that assumption on? Because you said assuming they wanted to.
Yeah, We have learned a considerable amount about the Democratic Party's engagement of the UFO issue. A lot of this is thanks to the work of Grant Cameron, the Canadian researcher based in Winnipeg, who is the world's leading expert on the intersection of UFO-ET phenomena and presidents. His website is presidentialufo.com, and probably the most important section there has to do with the Clintons. In 1993 to 1996, Lawrence Rockefeller, one of the Rockefeller sons, who was always interested in these issues. He's dead now. He died a couple of years ago. Made an effort to convince the Clinton administration to end the truth embargo. So that would have ended at some time in 1994, 5, 6. Many people in the Democratic Party, particularly in the executive branch, knew about this and were even involved in it. Though they've never spoken about it since or been asked about it by the press. This was a significant event in American history. It did not result in disclosure, but it certainly shook up the troops in Washington, D.C., particularly in the military intelligence community. As we know, Clinton leaves office, Bush takes over, 8 more years go by, we don't get disclosure. But in those 8 years, during the Bush administration, first former chief of staff to the President Clinton, John Podesta, calls for the release of all UFO files at the National Press Club in 2002 and then repeats that in 2003. And then in 2004, Bill Richardson, friend of the Clintons, former Secretary of Energy, ambassador to the UN, and at the time governor of New Mexico, calls for the release of the files regarding Roswell. Dennis Kucinich, a presidential candidate, is interested in the issue. He tries to bring it up in his space preservation treaty. He gets asked about it at the presidential election, yada, yada, yada. And so it was clear to us that the Democrats were planning something, and they were speaking out to it. They thought they were going to win in 2004. This was all based upon winning the 2004 election, which they didn't. Then they sort of stepped back, kept their mouth shut, and played it a little closer to the vest, planning on, I think, acting when they won in 2008. So when the Democrats win the election, To me, the window of opportunity for disclosure opens as wide as it's ever been since Roswell, which is the closest we ever came to disclosure, was Roswell in 1947. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking for indications of is this the case? And we got those indications almost immediately because Obama, who has not been part of this issue and is not connected to this issue in any way, wins the election. One of the first things he does is appoint John Podesta, the head of his transition team. That was noted. Then with Podesta's advice, he then appoints Hillary Clinton to be Secretary of State. Then they appoint Leon Panetta, who was Bill Clinton's chief of staff during the Rockefeller Initiative, to be the head of the CIA. And then Bill Richardson, who I mentioned earlier, they tried to appoint him Secretary of Commerce. They were literally putting a disclosure team into place, is what they were doing. These are people in the Democratic Party aware of the issue, who intersected with the issue during the Rockefeller Initiative in 93 to 96. They're literally putting them in major positions in the Democratic Obama administration. So, and there, you know, there's more behind-the-scenes stuff, but the point is that that was a game plan in my view. Now,
well, how do you know behind-the-scenes stuff?
Well, I have people that I talk to, and I hear things about this and hear things about that. It's not the kind of solid stuff that you go and talk about in the radio, but it's confirmatory to the larger picture, right? So, Mike, I have a high confidence that the Democrats plan to disclose. If they can pull it off, it's still not a done deal.
They don't seem to be exiting very much from the Republican war agenda. I mean, it seems to me that the focus is just exactly what it was before.
Well, it's not exactly.
More war, more war, more war.
Well, if you focus just on that, but there's plenty going on that is different.
Well, I mean, but if you're focused on war, and we certainly see the government proceeding into Yemen too now, most likely. So making it a disclosure about ET presence would certainly put the kibosh on more spending for war, don't you think?
Maybe. I don't think if the announcement was made tomorrow that the troops would be immediately pulled out of Afghanistan and Iraq. I think the effect on such policies of disclosure there will be an effect, but it will take time. The worldview change that will come from the disclosure event will take time to evolve, a couple of years. So it's not like you disclose tomorrow and then, oh, I guess we've got to end all these wars. No, not so simple. But it is true that, again, the Republicans play a pretty hard ball game of politics, and one of the things they've managed to accomplish is they've entrenched the new administration in sort of a morass, principally by bankrupting the Treasury. I mean, it was already in bad shape, but they started the bailout. They completely took the money away. So essentially, the Democrats were just in a mess when they came in, and so they've been able to bog them down in a lot of stuff, a lot of partisanship, a lot of infighting, and so they wouldn't get anywhere. And that's made it difficult for the Democrats to really, I would say, quote, accomplish serious change, which was the big deal on their campaign. And so they've essentially stuck the Democrats kind of to the flypaper of the previous agenda of the government. So that has created the sense that there hasn't been much difference. However, there is some, and if you look closely enough, you see it. One of the key platforms of Obama was the open, transparent government. This is a non-trivial matter. The Bush administration was probably the most secretive in history. The Democrats ran on the policy of open transparency. It's notable that the major Democratic figure, as mentioned, Don Podesta, he operates from the center of American progress, downtown Washington, and is still a major figure in the Democratic Party. And we know this because when Obama went to China, that was a pretty important state visit. When Obama went to China, if you review the photographs of that meeting in China, you will see John Podesta sitting right behind Barack Obama. And when Barack Obama got off the plane on the return from China, Podesta followed him off the plane. So I can assure you, Podesta is a big cheese in this party. He's operating as the CEO and founder of the Center for American Progress, you know, down the street. So the administration comes in under this open transparency, and they have actually done quite a bit to lay a platform for information transference post-disclosure. In other words, I think this open transparency is really preparatory to disclosure. It's more about that than holding, you know, open meetings on the White House lawn about health care or whatever. And to give you an example of what I'm talking about, the day after Obama was in office, the 21st of January, one of the very first things he did was sign two presidential memoranda and one presidential order. One of the memoranda was calling for and laying out the basis of why the agencies in the Obama administration need to start developing open transparency protocols. The second memorandum called for the reform of the Freedom of Information Act, which is one of the supposed key tools we have to poke at the government and find out what's going on. It in fact, has been a ruse in a way because it's completely geared toward the government, so the government can tell you whatever it wants and not tell you whatever it wants, and there's little much you can do about it, except maybe go to court and spend a whole lot of money. And the presidential directive specifically overturned the presidential order written by put out by Bush in the very first months of his administration, putting additional restrictions on the Presidential Records Act, making it more difficult to get records and information out of the previous administrations, particularly Reagan and his father, George H.W. Bush.
Right. There'd be a lot of people who argue with you that the President Obama himself is being extremely protective of his own information. What do you say to that?
He may be, but these directives are what they are, and so by signing
that doesn't speak to transparency.
But the point I'm trying to make is that these memorandum and the presidential order overturning the presidential restrictions of Obama are specific acts with long-term effects and consequences. And so by doing that, they are servicing this open, transparent agenda that they're talking about. Now, again, the administration itself might not be as open and transparent as we want it to be. I never expected them, again, to suddenly shift into gear. But one of the reasons that they're getting a lot of criticism about any secrecy or any sort of opaqueness that they're operating under, and all administrations do, by the way, is because they laid out this expectation that they're going to go in that direction. So in a way, it's kind of a good sign that people are expecting more from them. Well, they still have a long way to go. But these memorandums are non-trivial. And then, in December, just before the end of the year, they announced, the administration announced on the website, they didn't make a big deal of it, but they did it, that he just signed a presidential order creating a national declassification center. Now, this declassification center is going to operate within the National Archives. And you can learn about it by going to the White House website and doing a search. I think you can also get it up if you Google Declassification Center. I'm confirming that right now, just a second. This is a non-trivial maneuver. Yeah, here it is. He's created an executive order on Tuesday. This was Tuesday, December 28th, I think. So right at the end of the year, during the holidays. It wouldn't attract a lot of attention. But the effect of this is it's going to change the way stuff is being declassified and accelerate the process. And it makes some very definitive statements in this order, including that that no government document should be declassified permanently. This, again, is being done without a lot of fanfare. There's been some other things that they've done as well. And so what is happening, in my view, is that while the administration struggles with the usual problems of governing in the modern world and also dealing with the carryover from the previous administration and the huge political partisanship going on and other mistakes that they've made, such as introducing health care too soon, while that is going on, they are in the background, somewhat more quietly, laying down the rules and the structures for a much more open, transparent government. Maybe not right now, but in a while. And one of the reasons this is extremely important to our issues is that once disclosure takes place, obviously, one of the principal concerns of the people is, what can you tell us and when? And they're going to want to know a lot and immediate. The government's position will be, well, we can't tell you so much, and you need to wait. And so we'll have this back and forth. I mean, it'll be a very intense engagement of the government on this issue. And the fact is that whatever the government wants to release, the release of that information to the people is still going to have to go through the legal protocols and the legal structures that are involved. And so the extent that those things are restrictive or dysfunctional, it's going to make it more difficult to get that information out, which is going to make a lot of people unhappy. So by laying down these structures now and making these changes now, they're creating a much more fluid situation post-disclosure so that information can come out. That's what I think is happening, and that's my take on it.
Well, I hope you're right. I don't embrace the idea that this is a transparent government, or I just don't feel the transparency coming through, but we certainly hope you're right and that we will be able to enjoy this breakthrough. You mentioned in one of your circulations, emails, mm-hmm. that you brought up again the question of so many other countries bringing through, coming out with documentation and releasing mm-hmm. documents, and there's always that question, is the United States going to be the country to expose, or will it be, should say disclose instead of expose, or do you still feel that it should be and will be the United States, or do you think other countries are lining up to take the job away from the U.S.?
Well, the answer to that question is this, that up to 91, the there was a fairly unified front on this. And the United States was the leader of the disclosure of the truth embargo, and the rest of the world was going along with it. All of our World War II allies and the nations we defeated in World War II, China and Germany, were all completely on board. In other words, it was our call. We created the embargo, we maintained it, and it was our call as to when it would end. The Soviet Union and China went along for different reasons. They went along because disclosing the ET presence would have been a huge problem for their authoritarian-based ideological control states. But once the Cold War ended, this principal barrier to acting on this matter is lifted, and disclosure at that point is inevitable. And it's a question of when and who. Now, overall, initially, I think the coalition of nations regarding the truth embargo held fast. But I think they expected that after the Cold War ended, that in a reasonable amount of time, the U.S. would act and we would end the truth embargo and start engaging this issue in a global way. But it didn't happen. And year after year went by, and the U.S. wasn't acting. In fact, the U.S. was continuing to grow its huge military intelligence complex. In short order, we were spending more money in defense, for instance, than all the rest of the nations combined, which alarmed a lot of people. We really slowed down or even stopped the nuclear armament process. We still have all these thousands of nuclear warheads. So does Russia. So they became really concerned. What is our intention? And the break finally came in the year 1999 when France, not surprisingly, issued the Cometa report, which was a two-year study done by a non-governmental group. In other words, a group that's made up of former high-level government people, but is not officially a government group. They published this report, the Cometa report, which basically concluded that the ET explanation was the only logical one for the UFO phenomena. And also talked about the reason why the United States government is so secretive about this and what will it take to change that. This was a message sent to the U.S. through non-diplomatic channels that France was not particularly interested in continuing this truth embargo much longer. Okay, so in other words, these nations are losing patience by the year 2000. Mm-hmm. And this opened the floodgates so that after that, nation after nation started releasing their UFO files. France started in 2004. Then the UK, which has been releasing thousands of files on a time-release fashion, Australia, Canada, and then in 2009, Denmark in January, Uruguay in June, Sweden dumped the largest group ever so far in May, and then a very important event took place on July the 21st when the Russian Navy released a story that they were going to start declassifying their underwater files.
July 21st of what year?
Of 2009. This is a big deal because the Russian Navy, as you know, is the one with the nuclear submarines and the extremely advanced high-tech equipment for tracking underwater stuff. And they'd been encountering things down there for years, traveling 200 miles an hour, trailing them in groups of objects, trailing them and then flying out of the water.
Is this information available? As you said, not all of it's available for radio interviews, but can this information be researched by people?
Yeah, just go on the internet and research Russian Navy UFO, and you'll get it right away. It wasn't picked up by the press here much, but you know the press here is in a coma. But what's important here is that there's no way that the Russian Navy releases that statement. Or does it without the Russian government approval, particularly Vladimir Putin? And so what the Russia is saying is that that Russia is on board here, and they're going to on board the disclosure train, and they may act.
You're saying there's a coalition of governments that are deliberating when this is going to be released, but if I'm understanding correctly, the troops are restless, and if something doesn't happen, any of the members of this committee will take action. Is that right?
Well, they are by releasing their UFO files. Now, I'm not saying they're releasing everything. They're not releasing anything that would explode the truth embargo on the spot. But by releasing these files, and there's about 13 nations now, they're saying to the U.S., well, first of all, they're doing two things. They're positioning themselves. They're getting on the right side of the issue so that as disclosure takes place, they're viewed positively. But also they're sending a message to the U.S., we're running out of patience here. Are you going to do this or not?
Mm-hmm.
And so Russia is particularly notable because Russia would have an enormous amount to gain by being the disclosure nation. But it gets worse because China has made a maneuver here, which indicates that they are in the play. And this was based around the July, was based upon an event that happened virtually at the same day that the Russian Navy's announcement came out. This was the July 22nd eclipse that passed over China. And just as in the case with the Mexico eclipse in 1991, when the sun was occluded, there were the Chinese people in the millions were seeing things up there in the sky that looked beyond UFOs, unidentified flying objects. And it made some news, as had a number of sightings in China. There's been a lot in 2009 that made some news. Okay, fine. But then, 2 months later, on September the 7th, a story emerges out of China that one of the national observatories at Purple Mountain had filmed it for 40 minutes. And they were reviewing the film of these UFOs filmed during the eclipse. And we can assume that the Purple Mountain Observatory was not using a cell phone camera. So the fact that that this story came out at all, because, you see, if the Chinese government didn't want this story out, it wouldn't come out. And so the fact that it got released at all, and by the way, in the story, they indicated they'd be studying this film, meaning we just filmed with a high-quality camera 40 minutes of UFOs during the eclipse. We're going to study it. This is China saying to this is the China that has a space program now, that blew up a satellite recently, that is going to go to the moon. This is China saying to the U.S., maybe we'll disclose.
Mm-hmm.
And so the U.S. is running out of time.
I've got a question coming into the chat room, which I'd like you to address, even though we talked about it last time, which is, what do you feel is the advantage to the country that handles the disclosure?
It will be one of the greatest political legacies in history for the country that ends
history.
In all of history.
Yeah.
That ends the truth embargo. They will be discussed and focused on, and the subject of endless books and papers for a long time to come. And the nations that come second, nobody will care. Right.
So then what do you think is holding back the countries that are starting to leak things out from actually just doing it? If with such an advantage in being the disclosure country, what is the element that's holding them from doing that?
It's an interesting question. I think that what's holding them back is less and less with each passing year. But ultimately, what is there something that might be significant enough that they would hold the line on this and continue to wait for the U.S. to act while the issue explodes around them, right?
Right.
There's one possibility that comes to mind, and it's this. At the center of all this, from the standpoint of the human condition, is the ET technology. The ET technology is the prize in all of this as far as most people's needs and concerns and expectations. Since at least the 40s, we have been studying retrieved ET vehicles. Not motherships, but saucers. And how many we have, we don't know, but it's very likely more than one. Have we been studying them? Yeah. You know, if somebody wants to make the case that, oh, no, we just put them in a box and buried them, fine, they can make that case, but it's useless. And we've had a limited money to study them and an underground facility. So just like in the Independence Day movie, pretty close, we have been studying that technology. And the two principal things we're interested in is the physics of the propulsion and the energy system of those craft. There's clear evidence that we have figured out something about the anti-gravitics of a propulsion system, because there's evidence that we're operating our own anti-gravitic craft, and I don't think they're fixed up ET vehicles. We built our own anti-gravitic craft. And what do I mean by anti-gravitic? Look, we know how things fly. Aerodynamics, right? It uses air pressure differentials. If you can make a basketball fly, you have just mastered anti-gravitics. Okay? So they can do that. And so as a result, we have made our own craft. What we don't know is how far they have gone with the physics of those craft. But the physics, energy physics rather, those craft. But if it's as good as we think it is, it could change everything on this planet. Now,
okay, well, let me just interrupt with another question. Is that you're taking it as a par for the course that they have mastered anti-gravity.
Yes.
And yet, this is kind of news to me. I mean, am I behind the times, or are you again talking about information that you've got as an insider?
No, it's been out there for
some time. I'm still curious about how come you're an insider, but that'll be
No, it's been out there for some time. First of all, there's already a lot of mainstream physics research on anti-gravity, so that's there. You can go research that.
Right, but I've never heard it announced that we've actually got anti-gravity.
No, they didn't announce it. I didn't say they announced it. So the evidence is there.
Okay, great.
And the evidence comes in two forms. One, insiders have come out and talked about it, and we've also got film of anti-gravity craft operating over our bases and landing back down on our own airfields. I mean, so that's pretty strong evidence. So this gets me to my point. One other thing we don't know for sure about, all right, is how many vehicles have crashed, either because because they were accidentally crashed or we shot them down. How many and who has them? All right. There's a lot of speculation, for instance, that Germany got their hands on a vehicle prior to World War II and studied it and may have tried to do something with that technology. Wouldn't surprise me. So how many and who has got them? Let's assume that there have been X number. And we know that some of them are in U.S. hands. We also have, there's a strong sense that the number of vehicles that may have crashed outside the U.S. were delivered to us because they crashed in nations that are friendly to us, but nations that don't have the resources to, quote, or the ability to contain the fact that they have those vehicles, and so they turn them over to the U.S. as a nice gesture. Okay, fine.
Very nice. How friendly.
So the U.S. has got some of these vehicles. Does China have any? Does Russia have any? Don't know.
Well, I saw a documentary on Discovery Channel, and unfortunately I can't remember the name of the place, that identified Russia as having a similar Area 51, and that it was believed that they, too, had a number of craft there. Are you familiar with that information?
Yes. And, again, I would not be – I mean, Russia's a pretty big country, and the Soviet Union was even bigger. And with a lot of influence around the world, so it would hardly surprise me at all if a vehicle has crashed there or has been delivered to them. So let's assume that they have one. But this still brings us to the point we're trying to make. But let's put Russia aside for a second. If the United States has got this technology and it's done the development on it for all these years, then once disclosure takes place, one of the most important aspects of the post-disclosure world is to what extent this technology is brought forward, to what extent it's then worked on by non-governmental or non-black world physicists, scientists, and so forth, and to what extent is it then put into use to address the problems and concerns of the human condition.
Yeah, I was going to say, to what extent and to what direction, dark or light,
light here. I mean, the dark can proceed unimpeded in the secret empire, but it will be a little more difficult once the stuff is out in the open. But it does bring a very important point forward. If you're one of these other nations and you want access to that tech, but the U.S. has got it, you see, if you were to act preemptively, or to the extent that you irritate the United States, to the extent that you offend us in terms of the process leading to disclosure, you might harm your access to that technology, or it might up the price. You see where I'm going here?
Mm-hmm. I see where you're going. I think that I believe that it can't possibly be that the U.S. is the only country holding these craft.
Yeah, however. But if you're Brazil or Mexico or France or Germany or the U.K., You can't count on Russia giving you lots of that tech, and you certainly can't count on China giving you lots of that tech.
And you certainly can't count on the U.S. giving to you either.
Well, U.S. is our allies, all right? And so they expect us to be cooperative. But the point I'm trying to make is the question is why hasn't one of the NATO countries ended the truth embargo preemptively, acting on their own? And the point I'm trying to make is one of the few reasons I can see what would prevent them is they don't want to harm their access to the ET technology, which is to be expected to be a factor in the post-disclosure world. And when I'm talking about technology here, I'm not talking about some new fancy can opener. I'm talking about technology that transforms the human condition. It's a big deal. And how much access and when you get it and how much you have to pay for it is going to be a big deal. And so this is one reason why they are not breaking the ranks. But they want the tech, right? And so if you want the tech but you can't disclose yourself, what do? You put pressure on the U.S. to disclose and get on with it. And that's what I see happening.
What kind of technology? I realize I'm asking you for conjecture here, mm-hmm. since unless you've been in there, you don't know. But when you talk about technology that could help the human condition, do you have anything in mind?
Oh, yeah. The energy is the principal one. Most people don't take time to think about these things, but energy, the cost of energy, I mean, there's energy all around us, but the cost of being able to use energy is the most common factor in all of human affairs, right? It is a factor in virtually every single thing you do from the morning you get up, the moment you get up in the morning, the moment you go to bed at night. That's just you personally. And it's a single factor in business and in some respects, governance. The cost of energy affects everything. Every fraction of a percent that the cost of energy goes up has a dramatic impact on human affairs because it's across the board. So consequently, if you can drop the cost of energy, you can a significant percent, 20 or 30 would be dramatic, 70, 80, 90 would be transformative. You can completely alter the equations that are in place that underneath the operations of governments and people.
Well, there, can I slip something in here? There,
yeah.
You've got your motivation for non-disclosure.
Why?
Because if people get free energy, the big kahunas at the top don't continue to become billionaires, more and more billions every year by exploiting the use of resources, right?
I'm afraid that's a misconception.
Why?
In fact, that in the post-disclosure, cheaper energy world, the billionaires will be even richer, not less rich. Admittedly, that the power elites have been able to manipulate to some degree geopolitical affairs to enrich themselves. There's no question, and in one of the ways they have done that, it's not the only way, is to maintain high energy costs by creating a false sense of oil depletion, peak oil,
and by actually doing everything they can to stall developments in solar. Among other solar energy, among other alternative energies.
Yeah, yeah. There was a game being played primarily around oil for a long time, wherein you, and it was very similar to the game that the De Beers cartel in South Africa played, and still somewhat does. Basically, they simply maintained an artificial scarcity of diamonds so they could charge more, and they got real rich, and this is what funded South Africa. Pretty nasty stuff, in my view. I would never buy a diamond. It's blood on every single one of them. Every single diamond you can find. So if I were to, it would be artificial. It would be a zirconium. In any event, they played the same thing with the oil. The amount of oil in the ground is probably far vaster than we've ever been told. But they understood from the beginning that there was no benefit to them to overstate oil supply. So they always understated. They would never reveal all the potential reserves or what they think is there because that simply reduces the price of oil. And they don't care about their asset sheet. I mean, the amount of oil that a company has, say, as reserves increases their asset base, but they don't care about that. They only care about their income, and their income is based upon the price of oil, the higher the better. And so for decades, they maintained this concept of scarcity of oil, which wasn't true, in order to jack the price up. Is it happened? Just about any war would increase the price of oil. And so not surprisingly, we've had a whole bunch of wars in the Middle East that's driven the price of oil.
Definitely not surprising.
Yeah.
So that's my point. If you suddenly are able to provide 50% of the planet with free energy, this is not going to do a lot for the price of oil, no?
Well, first of all, it won't be suddenly, and second, it won't be free. There is no such thing as free energy. That's just become kind of a catchphrase, but it's meaningless. What'll happen is... first of all, the oil game is almost over. They know that. I mean, people are on to them. They figured it out. And not only that, but it turns out then that the problem with oil is not just its cost, but that the carbon emissions are creating serious problems, killing millions of people every day just on pollution alone. So the game is almost over for them. Okay, fine. They've already made untold hundreds of billions of dollars. They're all richer than God. So now comes this transition that's ahead for us. So the E.T. physics if it's as good as we think it is, has the potential to drop the price of energy dramatically. And a dramatic drop in the price of energy is going to have a huge impact on our ability to address the human condition. But it's going to have another effect. By dropping the price of energy, let me step back. The way this happens is that the energy physics of that craft has got to be then taken. That science has got to be taken to build electric generators using that energy physics and source. If it's as good as we think it is, we'll be able to build generators which can produce energy, electricity like crazy for a fraction of the cost now without creating any carbon footprint. So the effect is that the cost of electricity goes down, and electricity is the energy transport. Forget hydrogen. Forget natural gas. It's a joke. It'll be electricity, but it'll be cheap. Okay, fine. At the same time, I think you're going to see strong advances in solar, so that eventually houses will be painted in solar absorbing electric producing paint, and virtually all the houses will be off the grid. But we're going to need electricity for the industrialization and other stuff. So the electricity will be very cheap.
I love your comment. Just to interject, solar cells. So you're talking about solar heating or solar energy cells within the paint itself.
Yeah, they're actually making paint. They're going to be able to make paint. You paint the house, and the paint on the house will generate electricity.
That is outstanding.
Plus, they're building better and better panels. So the point is, we'll be able to go off the grid on a home-to-home basis. But the cheap energy being directed by this new physics and the plants that will be created will drop the price of electricity. Now, it's still going to cost. Right, but you're going to pay a hell of a lot less and be happy to do it. Now, the companies that make these plants are going to make money, and of course, there's still going to be a charge for electricity, so there's going to be time, and we'll just use more of it, right? And so there'll be plenty of money being made there. But more importantly, the dramatic drop in the cost of electricity is going to open up the door for countless business models that would normally not be possible to be put into effect, and as a result, you will see an explosion in business around the world, where companies are being formed to do things they couldn't do before, and that'll, of course, hire lots of people and make lots of money. And the oil industry people and the nuclear industry people have tons of money, and they will invest in all this new business and make even more money. They just won't be making it in oil or nuclear power. So we're about to undergo that change. And when people say the reason we can't have the change is the rich people are going to get poor, that's not true. They're going to get even richer. So that's not the reason. The reason we haven't gotten disclosure is not enough pressure has been put on the U.S. government to end the damn embargo. So if the American people get off their butt and start doing what has to be done, they'd get it. They'd have it done real soon instead of leaving it to chance or to purely government whim. And so that's the way to look at this ET physics issue. Now, to drive this point home, let me give you two examples of how the antigravitic physics and the energy physics could help transform the world over in a very short amount of time. Let's take the antigravitic propulsion. If the antigravitic propulsion was available for open use, what we could do, it's not complex either, it'd be fairly simple, is we would build some very large barges, right, that would rest in an antigravitic craft. We would then go around and collect all of the nuclear waste, the millions of barrels of nuclear waste rotting away in piles and collections all over the United States and Europe and elsewhere, China, Russia. And we would collect this waste and put it in these barges and simply take it up into orbit. Pull the barge out of the craft, put a rocket on it, shoot it into the sun. All gone. No more nuclear waste. Overnight, all gone. Instead of spending hundreds of billions of dollars to ship it to a Yucca Mountain, I mean, that is a huge... So suddenly the nuclear waste issue is gone. Let's talk about energy. If the price of energy were dropped low enough, meaning you can generate power, heat, for a fraction of the cost you do it now, then we could build desalinization plants around the world. Desalinization plants are wonderful things. They turn seawater into fresh water, pure fresh water. But they are not in great use because the cost of doing it is simply prohibitive. It's a very energy intensive concept. So if we had cheap energy, we could build these desalinization plants, possibly park them off the coast of countries like Yemen and Sudan and so forth, and convert unlimited amounts of seawater to fresh water, pump it straight into those countries, and they could grow food till the cows come home. So we could literally end the food issues, reclaim arable land, and take enormous pressure off governments around the world, particularly off the population problems, I say population or human condition issues, and probably dramatically reduce a lot of the tension in the world and feed a lot of people and stop the deaths of people every day from bad nutrition and so forth. And this would not be that difficult, but we can't do it because the cost of energy is prohibitive. At post-disclosure, it won't be. And so there right alone are two reasons why disclosure should happen tomorrow, right?
So do you think the ramifications would be to be shooting nuclear waste into the sun? And how do you envision such an endeavor?
If we were to take every ounce of nuclear waste we had and shot it into the sun, it would be about the equivalent of dropping a grain of sand into the Atlantic Ocean.
Right, but how shoot nuclear fusion into nuclear waste into the sun?
What I'm trying to say. You put it on a barge and you take it up into orbit. All right. And so now it's orbiting the Earth, but then you detach the barge from the craft. You then put a rocket on that barge and accelerate the whole thing out of orbit into a solar impact orbit so that the stuff just goes right into the sun, all gone. It doesn't
have
to fly
around.
Oh,
you really hope people knew what they were doing on that one, huh?
Oh, it's trivial. I mean, it would be as easy as doing a pool shot. But what's missing is we don't have the ability to put it safely in orbit. Anti-gravitic propulsion would allow that, all right? And so once we have anti-gravitic propulsion available in the public world so they can utilize it in an open way, then we can build those barges and get rid of the nuclear waste. The stuff that is going to continue to decay for the next 500,000 years. It'll be gone. It'll be in the sun. The sun will turn it into...
I love your utopian vision of the future, and I want to ask you, do you really believe that this is what's coming?
It's not utopian. It's practically inevitable. We have anti-gravitic craft. We can't go around collecting nuclear waste with them because that would blow the cover on the truth embargo. And so no embargo, no use of the craft in that way. But once disclosure takes place, there's no impediment for them to use their anti-gravitic craft or versions of it to start taking that nuclear waste off planet. End of problem. So it's not utopian. It's an inevitable and automatic a result of being able to publicly access anti-gravitic propulsion drives.
I hope you're right. All right, we've got 5 minutes left, so I would like to ask you now, didn't that fly, by the way?
The what to who?
What is your message now? Because as I started out this conversation by saying you asked me to come back on because you have information you want to share. So
In
5 minutes, can you tell us what are you up to now? I know that you're doing conferences around the world. What do you want people that are listening to know?
Well, the first piece of breaking news. As of today, it's just been announced that one nice researcher out there has discovered what the book is in the hands of Hillary Clinton when she's walking with Lawrence Rockefeller in 1995 at the ranch in Wyoming. There was great speculation that book had to do with ETs because the Rockefeller Initiative was underway, and it has been confirmed that the book In Her Arms as She's with Rockefeller is in fact the book Are We Alone? By astrophysicist Paul Davies, Philosophical Implications on the Discovery of Extraterrestrial Life. This completely confirms what we knew to be the case, that they were talking about the ET issue with Rockefeller 95 at his ranch. Okay, here's the deal. First of all, the facts on Washington is in resurgence. We have sent out an international press release. We want people to go to factsonwashington.org and start sending letters, faxes, and emails to the White House Correspondents Association. Let's keep the pressure on. We're going to pound them until they break. It becomes a news story, and more importantly, until some reporters in Washington start asking Hillary Clinton and Leon Panetta, John Podesta, and Bill Richardson the questions about this issue that need to be asked and have not been asked. And we're going to continue that phase three of Facts in Washington right up until disclosure. Secondly, the X conference it looks like it's on. I've paid off the Hilton Hotel. We're about to start paying off the speakers, and a contract should be signed within 10 days. The X conference will be barring any problems in the next 10 days, at May 8th and 9th at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., two blocks from the White House. And by the way, that weekend, May 8th and 9th, is in fact a 9-year anniversary of the Disclosure Project's huge press conference held in the same ballroom at the National Press Club.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, how can people get more information about this?
The website will go active as soon as the contracts are signed. Right now, it's still up, x-conference.com, but it won't have the information about the conference for about another 8-9 days.
And your regular website is?
ParadigmResearchGroup.org.
Okay, everybody. So here are the places you can find out more about Stephen Bassett. It's ParadigmResearchGroup.org. It's FactsOnWashington.org. And soon, x-conference.com. Okay, Stephen, I'm always thrilled to have you on. I want you all to know that Stephen is in my upcoming book, Beyond the Matrix, Daring Conversations with the Brilliant Minds of Our Times. So look forward to that, along with many other people who are, like Stephen, looking to a tomorrow where humankind rises out of so many of our difficulties as a species and become truly the galactic beings we are destined to be. Stephen, thank you very much for being here. Thank you for all you're doing. I know that you are a warrior, and I will do everything I can to help people get to you, to your work, and to support you.
Thanks a lot, and I look forward to coming back with a whole bunch of new stuff in perhaps a few months.
Okay, you're always welcome. All right, everybody, that's going to be it for today. Thank you for listening in. What else have I got to tell you? I'll be going to Mexico soon. I'm going to be back with the whales and the dolphins, hopefully recording more sounds and getting more clarity on their message for all of us and having a great time doing it. So if you're going to be looking to order books from my website, please know I need all of your orders in before the 22nd so that you won't have to wait 2 weeks for them to come out. And please keep sending me your comments about my new book, Where Pharaohs Dwell. By the way, it's getting great reviews. Please, if you love the book, well, if you have any comment about the book, please leave a review on Amazon.com so that other people can tune in to how you feel and the general feeling about the work. All right, thanks again. Thank you, Stephen. Thanks to all of you. And I will be with you again. Well, actually, I won't be with you directly on Saturday. I'll have a pre-taped interview, which I'm setting up now, and I will be in the airplane on my way to Mexico City, where I'll be offering a workshop in the big capital. So for those of you that are in Mexico, I'll be there soon, and I hope to have a margarita with all of my friends, the Facebook people, etc. Okay, thanks again. Be good, be strong, be wise, and be committed. This is Patricia Gorey, Beyond the Matrix, daring you always to get beyond the blanket and soar with the eagles in the free thought zone. Arrivederci.